On behalf of Megan and I, we'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the lands on which we both live and pay our respects to their elders past and present. I'd also like to extend this respect to any First Nations, Torres Strait Islander, and Maori peoples listening. Dearest you, the best episodes are the conversations where I don't ask any of the questions I had on the list. And this, in my opinion, is one of them. As you'll soon hear in my, pretty persistent gushing on reflection, Megan DeBoer is a steady, warm light in an otherwise pretty dark corner of the self-help space, and that is wealth and finance. I'm really thrilled to share with you that she's joining me next season inside my conscious career and business mentorship space Off, which is officially open for enrollments today, right now. So we'll be gathering just once in 2024 from May through till August. So if this conversation feels true for you, then I want you to know that this is the season for you. So enrollments open today on April 7 and they close at midnight on Sunday, April 28, 2024. The theme for this season of Off is land in your deservingness. And I wanted to get into this a little bit before our conversation. What does this mean, land in your deservingness? From my viewpoint and worldview, it means closing the gap between what you're currently receiving from life and what you intrinsically deserve. So I'm talking more money, if that feels relevant for you. And this could be a pay rise or raising your rates with your clients, more opportunities, more responsibility. You know, if you sense and know that you're ready for a promotion or you want to become more for and to your clients. And of course, more impact. This season isn't just about self-worth. It's actually about how to connect with our value in our body versus think about it in our mind. So this beautiful work of stepping into a new wealth and value consciousness, there really isn't another voice or teacher or guide that I'd want to usher this season in with. Megan is a wealth doula, a mother, a maker, and a caretaker. Her business, Tended Wealth, operates around the values of interdependence, integrity, compassion, and liberation. All things that you'll hear us feel into in this episode. I hope you adore our very honest conversation, and I most especially hope you join us inside Off. You can visit getoffline.co/off to explore the full program or enroll directly. And again, enrollments close on Sunday, April 28, 2024. Okay, here is wonderful Megan and I on money for offline. So I was just saying to you that it's been a really long time since I've been sort of face to face on camera recording, because I've had lots of spacious breaks in the podcast and I've been doing some solo episodes. So I'm kind of arriving here in this episode feeling a bit like, not nervous, but a bit newbie vibes. Like I've got over 100 episodes in the bag, but I feel like I got on here this morning. I thought, oh, it's been a while.
Well, I'm honored to be here, especially if you haven't had guests on in a little while. It's what a pleasure to be in conversation with you.
I feel like you and I, wear something. And I just, I'd never want to be too full on with you where you're like, who is this chick in Australia who's just like showering me with praise? But because I've been receiving your work for so long and really sensing the incredible alignment, like not only in language, but like the belief system of our businesses and how we step into our work as mentors and guides. So to be collaborating with you is really like such a highlight for me. And it's just so rare to find the yous in amongst, you know, everyone. So just, for anyone listening, Megan has joined me inside Serve, my conscious business incubator program. We're recording for the podcast. And part of what you'll hear today is that she's also joining us inside the next season of Off. So she said yes to one thing. And I was like, you must come in to everything.
With pleasure. Yes.
I'd love to start with, I'm not sure how often you get asked this. I bet a little bit, but I want to start with you sharing your own money story and how your own personal experience and early relationship with money led you into the work that you're doing today through your business, Tended Wealth, and your role as this incredible kind of nurture-based wealth doula. So talk to us about you and money and how it all got started.
Well, there's a long story and a meandering story, and I'll begin in a place that I don't tend to begin all the time, but it feels like time and it feels appropriate to be opening up this part of my past, which is that I was raised in, I was born in 1975 and I was raised on the Oregon coast with parents who had traveled or who had left the East Coast and wanted to be in that sort of back to the land movement on the West Coast. And so I was brought up in this community of a lot of artists and a lot of people who really had intentionally turned away from a lot of the traditional elements of life. So jobs looked very different and unconventional. Money was something that we, first of all, didn't really need because there weren't very many stores to go to. You know, I got an allowance, but it was like I really only spent my allowance on gum at the one grocery store that we had to drive, you know, 15 minutes to get to. And we only went once a week, if that. So money was not something that was really a part of my consciousness. And when it did enter my consciousness, it was very much something that may not have been bad, but it was very low in the hierarchy of what was important in life. And there was an ethos of doing what you love and not worrying about the money. And there were people really across a pretty wide income range within my community, people who came from wealth, people who really were working many, many jobs just to make ends meet. And my parents were the beneficiaries of generational wealth. My father was an artist and we lived extremely simply with intermittent work, my father did. So I was raised kind of in a straddle, what I refer to as like a straddle experience of relatives who experienced wealth, generational wealth, but our family didn't, other than being the recipients, didn't actually experience a very wealthy life. And so there was a lot of internal confusion for me about what money meant, what the expectation was around having money. There was something about it that, because my parents had rejected so much of it, so much of what it meant, that I also was rejecting what it meant. And so that was really my formative years with in sort of coming into awareness about what money was, what it meant, what it could do, and my own feeling about it. And I would say up until probably, gosh, even like the last 15 years, I would say, I was also rejecting money and what it meant. And I wanted to, value everything else in my life and not prioritize money. And it became this very interesting dynamic that I had playing out, which was this rejection of money became almost a noble poverty is a term that I use a lot in my work. And what is fascinating is that I was also in this state of not believing that I was capable of making very much money. So these two beliefs were kind of dancing as a dynamic with one another. There was this moral superiority, if I'm being honest, about not valuing money, and at the same time, a lack of confidence of being able to make money. And the combination really was my deep, what I used to refer to as chronic under-earning. And that looked like me, oh my gosh, not charging for my work, giving my time away. There are so many stories, but one of the most poignant moments was when I had done all of this bookkeeping for a new client of mine. Hours and hours and hours, you know, a whole entire year of work. And I had two invoices in my purse ready to share with her when we were going over her reports. And I saw an invoice from her accountant on the table, and it was for more. Her accountant's invoice was for more than one of my invoices. And in that moment, I was really internally mortified that I would be assuming that it was okay for me to charge more than this accountant. And I decided in that moment to only give her one of the invoices, but it was literally like 2 years of accounting that I had done for her. And that became a persistent and chronic pattern. And that it went all the way back to when I was young and babysitting. You know, now that I've traced that history, my personal history with earning. But in that process, you know, when I was a bookkeeper, I wasn't entirely aware of my own patterns with money, but I was very observant. You know, all of this awareness has come after the fact. But in my work as a bookkeeper, I was witnessing other people and their relationship with money. I had a front row seat to all of the dynamics, all of the fantasies and the fears and the challenges that people had in their businesses, in particular with money. And that led me to get really curious, like what is going on? There's something else going on here, because I could see what needed to be shifted and done in their businesses. And I was even then beginning to assume this role of almost like a business coach and sharing with them what I saw, what they could do and what they could do differently. And month after month after month, the numbers would remain the same, and I would see their persistent emotional turmoil over the numbers that they were seeing. And that curiosity about what was actually happening underneath the surface is what led me to do my training in the Financial Recovery Institute with my mentor, Karen McCall. And in that process of me learning how to support others, I became extremely painfully aware of my own patterns, and particularly my pattern with under-earning. And that began a long journey of my own healing and really my healing around wealth and what wealth is. And now I feel like I've really come to this, it will be evolving for my entire life, but I've really come into this new awareness, new understanding, and new relationship with what wealth and what financial wealth can be, both for me and for others, and that it can be this really powerful force in our lives, and it's not to reject or to shun. It's really a privilege and a responsibility, and to steward it well and intentionally. And that really is my way of braiding the ethos that I was born and raised with, and this part of my own past that has been complex for me to navigate and integrate about my own personal history with money and wealth.
Gosh, that was so beautifully articulate, and that little micro journey that you just took us on. I just feel like so many people listening are going to be like, yes, 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 same, me too. Mm. You know, as you were talking, just kind of really in my own emotional body going back, you know, to what my own upbringing and what was modeled for me, you know, with money. And I was writing a piece of work the other day that I don't think, you know, the stuff that will just never make it out.
Yes.
It's important that we do this work that will never see the light of day, but it's still something that's trying to express itself. And part of what I was writing about, actually, as I've been designing the next season of Off, is, yeah, my own, I suppose, money story and what I was raised in and around, and just this kind of realizing that so much of this is work that's actually happening in the body, not the mind. And I think we want to attack it from the mind. We want to make sense of it. We want to intellectualize it. We want to learn and read the books and the articles and the listen to the podcasts and know. And so much of what was coming up for me is it's all these emotional memories and these stories that we're holding in the body, and just how important this body work is in evolving beyond what we might identify as these money blocks or these money stories, whatever we want to call it. And as I was writing about, you know, my mum, my beautiful mum, collecting coins to get petrol, you know, and that, whatever age, I mean, I would have been aware of this, I suppose, from, say, I don't know, 6 or 7 all the way through till I left home the first time at 16. Those little micro moments with our parents, they never leave us. You know, they have to be resolved. We have to sit with them, experience their innocence, our own innocence. There has to be that level of grace and release, because otherwise it's like it's trapped in the body. Like just what I immediately felt when I pictured her looking for $5 to get petrol to get us to school, like that. It's like these tiny little moments that all add up to this massive story, and that, you know, kind of bed you down in this relationship that you have with money. And there's like so many other ones, you know, even, you know, towards the end of her life, having these really real conversations, like as a mother now to a mother, and me just saying to her, like, I don't know how you did it. Like, you had four of us, I'm finding one, you know. Kind of hard enough, and thinking about her financial future and trying to set her up for success. And I remember going to the grocery store with mum, and she had $50 to feed 6 people for a week, and having to watch my mum be very resourceful, you know, inside the grocery store with what meals she would plan. And do you know what I mean? So it's like so much of this is just like alive in the body.
Yes.
And again, we just want to come to it from the mind of like, tell me what I need to know. What are the five steps to resolve my money blocks? When actually so much of what I've learned in my own resolution of all of this to arrive at whatever is the other side that I'm on now, is it really required me to sit with her pain? You know?
Yeah.
And like, and I think so much of what people experience when they have come from, and let's call it relative poverty because there's a very broad, you know, spectrum of that as well. But so much of what comes up for us is this shame. And I think part of what I was challenged with is I didn't know whether it was my shame or her shame.
Yes. Yes.
And is it actually just shared shame?
Yes. Yes.
So anyway, I just wanted to like bring that level of like body awareness to the conversation early. Because we listen to podcasts and we're having really quite an intellectual experience. And some things we might say today might actually trigger something in someone's body. There might be a contraction that takes place. Hopefully there'll be a really big expansion that takes place, a heart opening experience. But I suppose just us both tending to that of like if you're listening and this is a big topic, if you are listening, it probably is a big topic for you and that it's been a big topic for both of us as well. And it has informed, you know, what our lives bow down to and our work. So we just take care of each other in the moments when we go, oh, you know, this feels not good. And the keep listening, you know, because when I started doing this work myself, you know, on my own, sort of cultivating this harmonious relationship with money, which is what this episode's all about, I would start listening to stuff like this and turn it off.
Yeah.
You know, that level of resistance where you're like, I just can't.
I just can't.
With these two chicks talking about
this.
Like, you know, so much.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, and I'm just really sitting and holding the image of you witnessing and feeling what your mother was feeling and what you felt in that moment. The energetics of that visually, you know, your mother searching, wanting to provide, wanting to care for you. Oh, and your tears are so beautiful. And we hold it. We hold that fear with our mothers, with our fathers, as if the holding of it can be, can alleviate that pain. And yet,
and that's
when
we're
young, it's unconscious. Yes.
Like it does not. It doesn't matter how far along in my own journey with money I get. It's a continual release.
Yes.
And just remembering that we just have to let it out. Because what is so harmful and toxic is when we hold it in the body and we suppress it and we say it's not appropriate. Or, you know, you shouldn't feel that anymore. You should have healed that. Like I've got so much beef around this healing word at the moment. I just feel like it's really being co-opted and, you know, it's had its own marketing campaign now. And we don't need fixing. We don't need, it's not, this is a process to be in, you know. It's not outcome orientated and we don't wake up one day as this kind of perfect healed vessel. Like the whole point of life is that we're in this texture, that we face the texture, experience the texture. And so, yeah, and just when I got on to this recording, I was like, I know what's coming for me in this one. So buckle up because you're really such a you're such safe ground. You know, it's actually one of the questions I had for you in this role as a wealth doula. You know, I could not love that job title any more than I do. But I want you to talk to us about how you define the role you play in your clients' lives. Because, I mean, I've just expressed to you, I feel like you are this sort of steady presence in the background that just feels very safe to be in the fullness of it with you. And I think that you're a real... You know, people use the word expander a lot now, which I really adore, but like for me, you just feel like a facilitator. Like you just, it's an excavation. So how do you think about your role in your clients' lives?
What a beautiful question. And thank you for all of that reflection. And I just, what you just described, first, I want to just take a step back and just say, ooh, you know, so much of my work has become about the anchoring in time and space for that unfolding, that emotional release, that emotional, the in real time processing, that it must be processed in the body in this moment, that this is where the healing is, and that it is so often, yes, you know, I'm using words with my clients. There are narratives that we are working with, belief systems that we're working with. And my role is to facilitate the space that can be that space of unfolding, where I can accompany my client in that very challenging and meandering and nonlinear part of their journey, which can be hard. Because often when people come to me, there's an expectation of an outcome, and we do get to the outcome. But on the way, the path is really a sacred path. And that's where, for me to adopt the name Wealth Doula, because I have been a birth doula in that incredibly sacred space of being with a birthing woman, holding the gaze of someone going through something that they have never gone through, and being the steady presence to be the anchor, to be the, to simply be. Really, it is simply about presence, is how I see my role. And then guidance where and when necessary, but really honoring the wisdom and the intelligence that is available in each one of us when we are able to let down our guard just enough to allow a new version of ourselves to be birthed. And I don't claim to ever know or believe where someone must end up. You know, I am really there to guide and support them. And sometimes my work with clients ends in a way or lands in a place that neither of us could have expected. And that's the most beautiful celebration, because there's this honoring of the deeper soul level process that needs to come through. And the money is so often just a part of the drama around it. But the real healing is underneath, whatever the circumstance, the story is often just a reflection or an aspect of a much deeper unfolding. And yeah, I see all of us working through our own individual money stories, our collective money story, where we are in this late stage capitalist reality. We're all contending with it, and we're contending with it. Yes, it's like in our own checking accounts, but it's also our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, all the way back, and these emotions that likely have not been processed. And just as you're describing, the very real scarcity, the very real fear for survival, fear for being able to support and sustain ourselves and our loved ones, there is a visceral quality to it that is in our bodies and may or may not be ours. But I loved how you said that it's shared. You know, it isn't, the question isn't, is it mine or yours? It is ours. And it is the requirement is to feel it and to allow it to move through, to allow it to move through tears, through movement, through our voice, through new action. That's where the active healing exists. And that's where I feel my work comes in, is just in this moment, just honoring where my client is and being there as both a presence and a guide. Yeah.
Mm. And this is what makes you so special. And I think for anyone listening, you know, we're in the era of self-help, self-optimization. You know, we are absolutely inundated with people saying, I can help you. Here's my three-step formula for X, Y, Z. And so for anyone listening, you know, so much of what I've learned in my own journey as a mentor and, you know, being mentored by other people is the real ones, the real ones are space holders, and the real ones are the ones that are talking less and listening more and are offering you prompts and are going on explorations with you. Mm-hmm. You know, so we want to be really discerning when we're in space with someone or if we're receiving help. We need to start to really think about what is the quality of that help, the shape of that help, how does it leave you feeling at the end of, you know, your interaction with that person or that, you know, that community or whatever it might be. Because I think that it's become a little bit blurred for us in, you know, this piece on self-determination is kind of what you're getting at. Like, it's all within us. You say that, you're like, oh, shush. Just tell me. You seem to know. Just tell me the answer. But it really is that. And I think us landing back there is, you know, if we're going to invest our hard-earned, and let's be honest again, in this economy, this global broken economy that we're living in, if we're going to make that investment, I think we do want to start paying attention to just the energetics of it and the tone of it. And yeah, because there's a lot of people promising a lot. And I think, you know, we spoke about this inside your serve session, which maybe we can get into now. I hadn't really had it as a question. I have so many other questions for you, but, you know, when we talk about money, what we also bump into out in the kind of social collective is manifestation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we both have a pretty firm belief on how dangerous remaining purely in the magic, the mystique of the energetics can be when it comes to money and we're working with real money, moving money, spending money. And oftentimes these manifestation coaches or guides, and so many of them, we should say, are doing absolutely incredible, needed, required work. But there are those ones, and we're going to get them in every industry, where they're charging a lot of money. And what I'm kind of observing happening is placing a lot of the kind of responsibility and ownership on the person. It's like, yeah, but you're just not existing in the condition of it. And yeah, but you're just, your energy is blocked.
Yes.
Should we talk a little bit about that? Because I know you were talking about straddling earlier. I would say in your work, you probably are more on the conservative side of how the energetics kind of interplay with the actual, the currency of money. So I don't really know what my question is. I suppose it's more of an entry point to talk about the role of all that.
Okay. Beautiful. Beautiful. And I would love to just step back a moment and just say, like, that piece around self-determination and, you know, it, like, I just honor so deeply the wisdom that we each hold and the incredible, dynamic potential that arises when we are opened and working with someone else, that there is a beautiful, there's a beautiful condition that opens when we're in the right kind of container for us to go beyond ourselves. Like we don't have to do everything ourselves. And we have so much wisdom within ourselves that no one else is ever going to know what that destination is. And I actually think it's like the magic of that third element of like being together and finding your way from that place. So I just wanted to make sure to speak to that, especially because of that trend that we're both aware of and both seeing of, you're not following the right thinking. You know, you need to go back to the thinking models. And it's interesting because for such a long time, I've had a challenge with so much of that language, even though deep down I believe in our ability to create, to co-create with the energetic realm.
Yes. And it's quite simply, that's it. Like that is actually it.
Yes. Yeah. And it is about being in what I think of as like coherence with that, with those forces, and meaning it really helps to have your body not in resistance or rejection to something, but it is not simply about just overlaying thoughts and beliefs without doing that deeper, more integrated work that we've been speaking about, you know, in the body and working through and releasing and befriending some of those early memories or, you know, from our own experience or from our shared experience. But now to answer your question more directly, or what you brought forward.
Or whatever it is. What was it? It was like a brat. Let's talk about manifestation.
I love it. But yes, I mean, I guess I am a little more conservative. And I think it's because I have just seen too many people, victim might be a hard, maybe that's too strong of a word, but I often don't think it's too strong of a word.
Like, I think victims, it's being taken advantage of.
It's being taken advantage of, and it's of magical thinking. And we're all susceptible to variety of forms of magical thinking, but it's where that tendency that we all have as humans can be exploited and manipulated. And I have seen the consequence of that. I've seen these really high credit card bills from programs that were sold that didn't deliver. I've had clients who've had to file a lawsuit to get their money back from a program that didn't deliver. So it is a part of our current reality. And that's why I think it's important to talk to, and where I feel more cautious and conservative when I'm speaking about it, or when I'm exploring that language. Because again, I do hold this belief and knowing that we are co-creating with that energetic realm. And We're also operating in this physical plane, and we do have, like, there is a number in our checking account that is very, very real. And until it changes, that's what we are operating with. That is the resource. And it doesn't, I think what we, where we get so limited, honestly, in our thinking is seeing money as the representation of abundance or of wealth, when,
or our value,
or our value, yes, or our value, and equating it and substituting it. So to me, it's like, regardless of how much you have in your checking account, can you stretch into the incredible wealth? And it takes work. It takes work to get there, because we're so, because fear and scarcity and survival are so intertwined that it's hard to not equate those two things. But it's a practice to see our checking account balance and to come back into our body and into our breath, and to remember that we are in this moment, we are okay, we are safe. Mm. We can take a breath, and a slow breath in and a slow breath out, and remind ourselves that we're still, we are in this moment because we are breathing. We are surviving, and there is always potential. If there's breath, there is always potential. And that's the truth. And that's really the work at the core of it that I think we miss. And when we're just operating on this magical thinking and future potential, yes, there are times to make investments. Yes, there are times to take a risk. Yes, there are times to make, you know, to stretch ourselves beyond what has been comfortable. And yet, it's so important to be in the truth of where you are in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is, so this is really important, I think, and this is what we both want to ensure lands in this episode, that both things are true.
Yes. Yes.
And part of what we've both learned about this work is really, and I think what I heard you saying is at the heart of this work is really increasing our capacity to desire more, even though the reality looks like this. I'm expanded still in the potential of what will be, not what could be, what will be.
Yes. Yes.
But both of these things are real and true for me. I'm not ignoring the reality of what that number is and what my bills look like and what I'm up against this month. Yes. I'm landed. I'm accepting of this. And at the very same time, I am holding myself as the condition for more.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm glad we got into that. And I can't believe that wasn't on my list of questions for you. The manifesting. but I do take this really seriously. I mean, the last season of Off, the entire theme was around highest vision. And so much of the work we were doing was energetic in what does it actually look like every day to become the condition for the highest vision? How do we maintain that? How do we live and exist and dream from that place? And it was the experience that I had inside that season that caused me to go, hang on, there's a whole other piece of work that really must happen, frankly, first, which is the landing in the deservingness.
Yes. Yes.
Because we are all out there calling in more. You know, we're all doing this energetic kind of conditioning work. But actually, do we fundamentally, and I talk about this as like tissue and bone level in the cells. Do we believe that we are worth that more? And then beyond that, is our body primed to hold that? And I had this, you know, and I know you'll get this, our work is really like, our life is the training ground for our work, and everything that we're going to go on to teach, we of course have to experience over and over and over again in quite a visceral way to be able to teach it from that more embodied place. And so anytime this comes up in my life, I'm like, oh, it's all material. Like, it's like, you know, you're going to have a mentee present with this. And so you're going to have a direct experience of it first. And you need to be, you know, walk on the talk in these moments. But I had this with the launch of, Serve, and I think that was my biggest leap in whatever we would call that, of like, I don't know what I call that leap. It's a, it felt like I'd fully switched onto a different channel. We talk about this in the energetics work, don't we? Of like, there's multiple different realities kind of sitting above the one that we're experiencing right now. All of them are available to us. And what we're doing in this energetic work is we're attuning, where it's a turning the TV channel to another channel, the one that's up. And what does life kind of look like up there? And what was so interesting about the launch of Serve, it was like all of the work I've ever done kind of funneled into this one moment, you know, and it was quite, I put it on Instagram. It was quite holy. I said it on Instagram. It was a very holy experience, because getting the money, so clocking over 100K in the launch, and it ended up being a nearly $180,000 launch. When I hit that 100K figure, what I immediately realized is nothing changed in my body. And so this for me was that realization that you were the condition, you were existing from that place. So why would the thing dropping in the bank account actually feel any different? Because if you're truly the thing, then you're already living in that wealthy expression. And so the money just makes sense to be there. It's just like, yeah, well, that would be true. That is true in this reality. So that. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of add that in, because it's like, I think anytime we can bring that real, true, you know, I really have been there, and I really do know, you know, and what it kind of feels like to be, especially for anyone like building something and offering your gifts to the world and what you have to give, the spaciousness between creating the thing and people engaging with the thing is like a black hole that no one talks about. And so the work for us is in that density, it's in that dark point of how do I hold this? Be the condition for that outcome, even though my reality, the business bank account looks like this. You know, I came into January 1 with 7 enrollments and I had a target of 40 and I had a week to close. So, you know, these moments where you're like, oh, the material has presented itself. Like, huge, you know, and just, I suppose, fulfilling. Because at what point when we're doing all of this bloody self work, do we go, oh, yeah, you've done it. It's quote unquote worked, or like you've evolved, or you're no longer where you were.
Yes.
So maybe this is a bit of sitting in the success of the dedication to changing the reality, which we don't do enough.
Oh, yes. So beautiful. So beautiful. And what you're describing is that, that you had acclimated to that new level before it actually hit. And because you had expanded your capacity, when it did hit, it didn't activate your system, either in the like elation side or in the fear and terror and rejection side, which are both ends of a spectrum that can happen. And this is where, I mean, it is, it's such an affirmation, and it's so important for you to be, you know, feeling into that part of your story and to recognize it, to talk about it, to witness yourself in it and be witnessed in it. Mm. Because it's so easy to hop over that and to set your sights on the next goal or what you didn't accomplish, or all of that is just such a part of the conditioning that we're so used to.
Yes.
But to notice and to recognize, wow, look at how far I've come. Mm. This is evidence that something has shifted, that all of the work that I've been doing has allowed me to be in this expanded state where I've receiving. Already mm. been acclimated to receive this more. Mm. And that, yeah, I just want to give you a moment to really feel that, because it's not easy. And when there is a challenge, when there's been a challenge receiving, and I didn't share this before, but I personally use the term under-earning because it's a part of my story and it's a familiar piece of language, but I actually refer to it as under-receiving in my work, because I don't see it as just under-earning money. I see it as under-receiving in general, under-receiving support, under-receiving like being uncomfortable receiving feedback, praise, all the ways that we might receive.
Yes.
There can be a really deep thread, and I think it is particularly challenging for a lot of us who have been raised and conditioned as women or female identified in this culture, in Western cultures. Receiving is not always supported and encouraged. Giving,
yeah, because
is what
we
is.
Become greedy, and we yes. become, you know, that we've yes. gotten a bit ahead of ourselves.
Selfish. Yeah.
Selfish.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And this is the two ends of it. It's the landing in the deservingness, mm-hmm. and it's increasing the capacity to receive.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that's the big learning, isn't it? That how could we possibly increase our capacity to receive from a place of feeling undeserving?
Yes. Yes.
So it's not really chicken or the egg. It's like chicken is the deserving, or whatever. I'm like, is it chicken
yes.
or the egg?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. It's big. And you know, when you were telling your story in the beginning, it made me remember when I left my job, how much literally what would have now, when I look back, it's hundreds and thousands of dollars worth of strategy that I wrote for people and gave to people. I'm laughing now because I'm like, you're wild. What was that? But I realized that I came out of that job with absolutely no tether to my value or my worth. And when somebody was like, oh, you've left that job, like, what are you doing? Can you help me with this? I just, oh, let me just help you. It's all good. I'm taking a bit of a break. I'll just.
Yeah.
And so that was the story I was telling them, was like, I would take me 5 minutes. I'll just, you know. And then, you know, a day later, I've written an entire, you know, marketing strategy or something for someone. And just looking back, and that was really the first kind of 6 to 9 months of my experience, not, you know, being in a full-time role, was me working for other people more or less for free, or I was kind of hiding in, like, burying my value piece in exchange and trade. And that made me think a lot about your noble poverty piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because as I was starting to explore my own consciousness, and I'd started meditating, and of course I'm so deep in this beautiful wisdom of what we really are and what this whole thing's all about, that I got into that, you know, very much like, let's just trade, let's just exchange, and this is how it should be.
Yep.
But realizing that, you know, I put myself in Mm-hmm. And my family, actually, mm-hmm. like I'm, you know, yeah. married, and we were trying yeah. to have a baby at that time.
Yeah.
And like, good on Tony. I always say this man who, like, sure, you can spend our house deposit figuring it out, mm-hmm. you know, or like paying yourself a little bit mm-hmm. of money out of that so that you're helping all these people for free. But, oh, yeah, they do need it. And, oh, they, you know, they don't have access right. to that. And
right.
it was all of that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much there.
Yes.
So much there. And then even going into actually charging for what was then kind of coaching, and the rate I was charging mm-hmm. was what I believed they thought I was worth.
Right.
And what I believed that they would pay, if that makes sense, of what they could tolerate
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
what they would think is appropriate.
Yeah.
And yep. literally my rate has gone 4 times higher in
yeah.
5 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As I've like yeah. steadily done this yeah. work, you know,
yeah.
and now I,
yeah.
if I do end up doing one-on-one career mentoring, and every now and again, I'll open my books for that. It's beautiful, love, fulfilling work. And sometimes I will get people who write to me and say it's too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have sent me somewhere I would yep. not be able to retrieve myself a few years yeah. ago.
Yeah.
And now I'm so steady. Again, this is the me mm-hmm. having a direct experience of the commitment yes. to doing the bloody work.
Yes.
And that this is totally acceptable for you to believe that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's true for you, but it's not for me.
Right.
And this
right.
is wonderful. And right. there's going to be someone that's yeah. right for you
that's
at the
right
price
you.
That you believe
yes.
is right. And that's not me this time. And I just, you yeah. know, wish you all the best. And
yes.
I literally drop it. I never think about it again.
Yes.
Until
yes.
I'm in conversations like this. So again, mm-hmm. just.
Mm. Yes.
Different.
Oh my gosh. And this is the thing, especially, I mean, you're describing your journey from being employed to being self-employed and that in-between period. And when we are self-employed, we are in the consistent, persistent exchange where there is the where there is the conversation around value, whether it's a, you know, a pricing conversation, this is what my rate is, or this is an estimate for the work for this project. That is a constant. Whereas when you are an employed person, you have that conversation once, maybe twice a year of negotiating your salary, asking for a raise. It is not a daily, multiple time a day conversation.
Yes,
and so
I never thought about this.
And in that conversation is essentially like the question of your value comes up. And if you're not settled and you're not anchored in what you know to be true about the value of your work, and how you value your time and all the rest of it and your sense of worthiness and deservedness to receive, to be paid what you are asking to be paid. If that is shaky, and it's normal if it is, it doesn't solidify immediately. In fact, every time you raise your rates, there might be a little shakiness every single time. And yeah. then you come into a sense of embodiment and your rate is very aligned. And this is where I spend a lot of time with clients, is really coming into a rate that they are, that both makes sense in terms of what they need to be charging to support and sustain themselves and to sustain their business, but also a rate that really honors the work that they are doing and the results that they are getting from their work. Mm-hmm. But it requires, it is really often the heart of the work that I do, because it's at the intersection of so many of those internal dialogues. It's the, yes, it's deserving, discomfort receiving, sense of worthiness, but it's also where we get tripped up and we start thinking about the other person. What are they going to think of me? Am I going to be rejected by them? Am I going to no longer belong? And it sometimes it's not even the client. It's actually like, my uncle, what will my uncle think of me? What will my aunt think of me? What will so-and-so? And so it can be very fascinating. And so often those are very unconscious. It's like, we just feel blocked, but we don't know why. It's just like, ooh, there's something really edgy and uncomfortable about that rate, but we don't know exactly why. And so the interrogation into what is actually happening below the surface is, oh, it's such fascinating territory for me to take my clients into and to explore. Yeah.
Are you like, so pop your seatbelt on. We're going to go for a bumpy old ride to Self-Value Town. This is really, I feel like, what I want to get into inside this season of Off. And it's for even if you're in a career and you recognize that you are being underpaid or that you could be being paid more, you should be being paid more, or you're working for yourself, what somebody else tells you your salary should be, what your friend is on, what your partner's on or thinks you should be on, and as a founder, what so-and-so is charging or, you know, what your competitor's doing, all of this is complete, these numbers are completely irrelevant if they're not embodied for us.
Yes.
So really a true desire to want to help people get into the room with the boss, to have a conversation about their salary from a place of true embodied deservingness. Not, I haven't had a pay rise in 12 or 18 months. I mean, frankly, most people more like 3-4 years now. Or the 2-5% you're giving me every year is not sustainable in this fucking economy. Like, it's just not. But not all of that. That's not like the conversation. It's the, it's how we're arriving in that room, how landed we are in that absolute embodied deservingness and a true tethering to the value and the worth. And really on the more strategic side, understanding the value that the role that we're playing brings to the business and how the business recognizes that value.
Yes.
So getting really articulate with this stuff and going in and really just owning that conversation and accepting whatever comes out of the boss's mouth. Because if the boss says, well, that's all great, but the business can't afford it, cool, well, I'm going to get a new job. Like, and then it's like the acceptance is so empowering, where it's like, I love it here. I wish I could stay here, but you, the business is no longer in a position to pay me what the role is worth. And now I have this permission slip.
Yes.
To go and start interviewing for roles in a range that is between X and X. And this is how we get those bigger leaps, which I think most of us know is it often takes us having to go somewhere else to get, you know, more than kind of 5K more a year. And then it's the same for the founders.
Yeah.
You know, when we're going into proposal and negotiation stage with our clients, it's bringing those proposals and those rates to the clients from a place of, I know my value, I know my worth, I know the transformation that I can deliver to your life and your business and, you know, through whatever service we're offering. And this is what informs, you know, what you're seeing from me. And again, if you don't believe it's right or it's outside of your budget, then I accept this, but it doesn't call me to question whether my number's accurate or not.
Exactly. And to be able to liberate yourself from that narrative and to really anchor into your truth. This is not a fit for them. Not, this is a reflection on me. You know, like it's just that I need to find a different place. And it's about, you know, it's so hard for some of us to do this work of like really honoring our need. You know, I think that is sort of the, what we're also talking about is honoring what our needs are, seeing them as valid and necessary, as the precursor to being anchored in the truth of what it is we're asking for. But when we recognize that, when we recognize what our need is, like I need to, like I know the value of my work, and to accept less is no longer in alignment for me. Therefore, I must go to a different position, or to say, you know, to redirect a potential client to a better fit for them, and to trust that there is going to be the right client for you, that you, that that is the work, that is the feedback, is now I need to elevate the kind of client that I am attracting to me, that is in alignment. But if we stay when it is, when we've outgrown a position or a salary or a rate, when we stay in that space, it is either going to lead to burnout or resentment. And neither of those are, neither of those are a healthy outcome for anyone involved. And that doesn't mean that you don't, for all kinds of reasons, tolerate that rate because you don't have another job lined up or whatever the reason might be. But it means that as you are in that position, you are clear in the fact that this is no longer in alignment for you, and you are seeking something else. And that is the promise that you make to yourself, regardless of the time frame that it takes to move into a different position.
This is it. This acceptance, this acknowledgement, and this acceptance, and then the internal decision making that takes place. What happens is the energetic, emotional labor dissipates. So then we are just in this really actually very healthy, supportive place of the mind. Because we're doing a job that provides us a level of funding for now. But what we don't have anymore is the labor. The thinking, the thought loops, the energy drain, the emotional drain, all of the dedication we put to, is this right or not? Should I be getting paid or not? All of that goes away. And this is actually how we increase our capacity to hold more, is by through that acceptance, isn't it? Of like that.
It is.
That shift inside, like I'll turn up and do your job. Fine. Like, and it's, that's that simple. I'll come in and I'll be great because I am great. And I will do a great job. This isn't also about the quiet quitting thing. You know, we're still showing up and we're doing the job to the best of our ability, knowing that it's now a finite amount of time that we're going to be doing it for. And we're starting to live in the reality of doing this job for a lot more money, and how great that will feel. When we find that, you know, that employer that sees that value. So, I wanted to talk to you actually about, I suppose it goes back to maybe the noble poverty thing a bit, but something I bump into a lot, and I think one of also my bigger things that I had to sort of transmute into something else, you know, fuel for growth and evolution, is the really extreme, sincere acknowledgement of our privilege, and how in doing that level of work, and this is another type of work that we're doing, we're talking about now, in acknowledging for many of us all the ways that we have benefited from, you know, the color of our skin, the way we smell, what our name sounds like on a resume or looks like on a resume. When we really start to do this, this work of, you know, acknowledging our privilege, what I've had happen to me, and I've also had with mentees of mine, is also kind of slumping into this level of there, but there is people you know, especially those from marginalized communities and groups and those who are underrepresented, I think about everything from, you know, Black Indigenous people of color, survivors of domestic violence, single mothers, like, so how you can just keep going with, but I'm still in a better quote unquote position. So how dare I want more?
Yeah.
How dare I take more when that more really needs to go to the people who need it more than me? And so I suppose I want to talk about that also as a theme that as we start to increase our state of consciousness, which is really increasing our state of awareness, the peripheral vision in life, this will come. We will naturally bump into privilege and go, oh my fucking God, how have I been living my life this way? And then that can, cause us to not claim what we rightfully do deserve in the name of it going to someone else. And I think the question we're asking, but is it going to someone else? And I think where I'm landing is as these aware, conscious people with this sincere commitment to understand our privilege, money can be very powerful in our hands because of what we choose to do with it. You know, my screensaver is I'm going to express my money. I'm going to take it all the way. And what that means for me is not just for the self. So there's obviously tending to my direct family and ensuring that my daughter is resourced in her life that enables her to make decisions that are right for her. Outside of that, it's a it's about the impact. It's about the, I suppose it's the giving.
Yeah.
The quiet, humble, sincere giving that isn't a declaration, that isn't performative, that is just happening quietly. And there's lots of different ways that we do that giving, right? It's not just giving money. It could be giving time, services, skills, scholarships, all these different things. But how do you sort of, I don't know what this is, it engaging with this with clients?
Oh, it's such an important topic and theme and conversation. And I think we are all, or I want all of us to be contending with this, to be wrestling with it, to be acknowledging it. I mean, for me, as I shared before, you know, like the privileges that I have been afforded by my birth are, you know, I owning that, acknowledging that can feel painful sometimes because it is a reflection of the disparity that we see, the wealth inequity that we see, and that divide. As much as I have been working with it personally on a very, very, very personal level, I don't know that it will ever heal or that I want it to ever heal. I actually want it to be alive and informing how I, how I am making decisions all the time. And what I think there, what I've observed, what I've known as, again, like a somewhat of a straddler between two experiences, even though one was very distant, is that there is both a reality and a falsehood around there, it being one or the other. That if I have what I need, someone else has less. And that there's truth to that, but there's also, it's too easy. That's too easy of an answer. And I want to be in the question of what does it look like? How can we live into and explore and imagine a generative reality where we are all able to flourish according to what we need without that hoarding, which is what we see, which is really the root of the imbalance, the wealth inequity and the imbalances that we see across, you know, across most of the Western world, if not the entire world. How can we circulate money? How can we resource others? How can we allow the money that is coming to us to be a resource for us in our own lives and make sure that it is sustaining us while then re-diverting it? And sometimes that should look like redirecting clients to someone else who would either benefit the client more or deserves that work more than we do. That is a form of redirection that we don't talk about enough. So it's thinking about it on all levels, circulating money, circulating time, circulating resource, social capital, all of the ways that we can uplift and circulate and create a more generative expression of what wealth can be. And I just don't know that we have, it's showing up in pockets, but I don't know that we are able to really feel into what that will feel like if we're all existing in that place where it's not, I will take less, I will dampen, I will downplay what it is I want or what I desire. I will not allow that to be fully expressed. I will suppress it because, like, in service to those who don't have access to the same that I have access to. I just feel like there is a middle story that needs to be explored. I don't have all the answers. I'm practicing the best that I can, but for me, in my personal work and in my work, to be in integrity means that I do not suppress or deny what it is that I want and I desire. That is too easy for me to fall into that. And so for me, it's a practice of really honoring those desires and the desires, you know, to me, one of the most important inquiries and what I try to hold with clients is what is your truth? What is your version of plenty? We're sold incessantly what a wealthy life should look like. And I just feel like there is such a lack of imagination across the board of what it can look like. And we have images, we have examples of this very self-serving style of wealth and not a real generative expression of wealth and a creative, I want to stimulate the imagination of people who have, you know, like a lot of resource. What can that look like? And to not always hold the privilege of being the decider. You know, the imagination can be get that money into the hands of those who deserve the privilege of making those decisions for themselves. Not from your bias and what you assume to be true. And that is that a whole other level of what they need, because that's a whole other level of imperialism.
I've been listening to a lot of Tyson Yunkaporta, who is just like essential. And he's First Nations, and he said something really powerful on a podcast episode the other day, which was just like, just give us the money.
Yes. Yes.
Don't give us your programs and your initiatives and your councils and your let us have the money that's deservedly ours and let us spend it how we please.
Yes.
And let us stimulate the economy. You know, in doing that in our own way. And that is what came up for me when you said that. It's like, it's not about us also playing the godly role of here, I am privileged person handing my, you know, my wealth and my monies to you. What will you do with it? It's like, it's the, the opposite of that. And I think your point on stimulating the imagination of what could wealth expressed look like, you know, outside of just money, sometimes it is, but you know, so for whether you're working in a business or you're running your own business, there is this requirement for us to stretch and think outside the box of, you know, it does cost your business money when you donate your time, you know, so if it might be about not having, you know, cash flow or you're not sustaining profit to be able to even give to do that sort of donation, we've been getting into this with social impact planning inside Serve. What might it look like for you to, so for me, you know, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is alongside financial donation to a not-for-profit that I have a very personal kind of belief in and connection to, what would it look like for me to take my content marketing and business development skills and apply that to a really important voice and activist and an author who, with the right branding, will reach more people. You know, because that's the game of branding and marketing. It's like, what's so powerful is when the right voices have the right brand.
Yes.
And they can break through the mass consciousness. This is the amplification of voices. And so that might cost me tens of thousands of dollars to give that. But it's another, you know, so this is the stimulating the imagination. It can look, you know, 1% for the planet. Well, really? I mean, where does that go? And who does benefit from that? And this is a big topic.
It is a big topic.
And where, and I want to say to you, sorry, but sorry to interrupt. I did want to just make a note on behalf of both of us. We come to this very honest, very public conversation, you know, with a level of knowing that we will fail trying.
Yes.
And we will say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And we will get it wrong. So we are both here knowing that there's going to be a falseness to what we're saying, but that's not going to stop us from, you know, really just having a go here and just.
Thank you. And absolutely. I mean, I feel it's a persistent inquiry that I'm in. And do I feel settled about where I am? No, not at all. Yeah. And I am in a, I am wrestling with it every day. And I also have peace around it every day. It's both. I'm holding both at the same time. So it is complex terrain. And I think it's, I just want to encourage more people to not shy away from being in the messiness of it, the not figured outness of it, and the failing while trying aspect of it as well.
Would you believe I've like not really asked you anything I had on my list, which is probably not that surprising. Before we finish, I do want to touch on the topic that you're going to be speaking into inside of.
Yes.
Which is actually officially open for enrollments as this episode airs the very same day. The session that you're joining us for is Cultivating a New Wealth Consciousness. And I wondered if we might have a little chat about what people can expect from that wisdom session. And in proposing that topic to you, what kind of immediately came up for you? I suspect some of it we have covered today, but it's the deepening of, some of the areas that we've been in.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, a continuation on some of the themes that we've already been touching on. And in that session, my hope is to really guide and lead people through that inner inquiry, because it's one thing to hear the two of us speaking about what we're thinking of and wrestling with. It's another thing to go inward and to begin excavating what is alive for us as individuals, what we're coming to the table with, what the idea of wealth consciousness means for us, where we are along that journey. And so I'm eager to step into that inquiry and lead people through that inquiry to help them. Again, I see it as an active, dynamic process, not as a lecture teaching. It's a lived inquiry that must happen and must be in conversation within each of us at all times. Yes. So, that's that is what I'm envisioning.
I really can't wait to host you, and you sharing that is just such a kind of poignant time for you to raise the excavation and the exploration of things, because when I launched off in, I think it was early 2022, so I've been in season quite a few times now, I launched it through the lens of the over-delivery, the over-executing. Mm-hmm. Everything had to be tightly programmed, and I had to have this roster of people, and it had to just be, you know, it was so tightly wound and bound. Mm-hmm. And I can really acknowledge where that came from. You know, was in you giving me your money, I must overexert, I must overdeliver, I must exceed your expectations. And we did good, incredible work. Every season of this space has been vital for the people in it and for me. Mm. But coming into this one, and I started to kind of stretch into this last season, now coming into this one is really landed as a mentor in like allowing the co-creation to take place. Mm-hmm. You know, I call us co-creators. That's from the very beginning. I've said we're co-creating this space together. And I was like, well, were we? I don't think they could really get a word in. And coming into this season, that's really the its fullest expression, I think, in the space, is what people will experience, is that we are going to be exploring, winding, curving, diving, coming up for air, going back down again. And your role in your session and my role in voice mentoring and my sessions is to provide those prompts, is to ask those questions, is to be in the wisdom with you and say things that might activate something in you and lead you on your next, you know, bit of self-inquiry. And it really comes back to what we were saying at the beginning, like the good ones and the true ones are asking a lot of questions and listening a lot. And, you know, that it is in you. And our role is to just pull it up, bring it into the light so that you can have a look at it, decide whether you would like to engage or not. And this is fine. I say this with awe, like, you know, you might bump into some things that you're like, not this year, and that's okay.
Yeah.
We can park those now. We've kind of brought them up to the top and they'll sit off to the side. Or you might come in and be like, let's have it all. You know what I mean? And you'll be supported in that sort of the bumpy road to enlightenment and evolution. I have a final question.
Yeah.
And it's quite beautiful because I really think it's a question that actually sits at the heart of your entire body of work. And you know, from Serve, I talk about this idea of true self-success. Mm. And really what true self-success is our individual wealthy expression, mm. how we define it for ourselves outside, well, including the money, but everything else. So I'd love for you to share with us when you're seated in true self and you're gazing out into your own reality, your own individualism and what you've cultivated for yourself. What is true self-success for you? What is your wealthiest expression?
What a beautiful, beautiful question. Just sitting with that question for a moment because it's...
Yes, not a small one.
Yeah, it's not a not a small one. Yeah, for me, what comes to mind first is to be doing my truest work. First and foremost, it is
preach that
to be not holding back. And that's really been emerging more and more and more for me. So that true self of really claiming my gifts and allowing them to be fully expressed through my work. And then to have, to be surrounded by beauty as I see it in my home, in my garden, clothing that I wear, pleasure and joy really being at the center. And the wealth of my relationships with the people in my life, the closest people, my family, my husband, my two daughters, my really close friends and family. To me, I really already have that wealthy life as I see it. And from here forward, it's really about deepening, sinking into and enjoying the wealth that I have already created. Mm. Yeah.
You did the damn thing. Now it's time to enjoy it. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm saying this to myself a lot is you can find safety. It's safe here.
Yes.
You know, like what you've cultivated for yourself is yours now.
Yeah.
No one's going to take it away and you can relax into what you have attuned to and cultivated for yourself.
Yeah.
And this is, what I'm hearing from you. So, what a beautiful reflection.
Thank you for that question.
Thank you for joining me today. I told you it was going to be an hour. It's definitely been an hour and a half.
I wasn't even paying attention to time. Same, I think I can go for hours.
Honestly, I've got to get to Portland. It's like, but it's going to be on my list. Oh,
that would be amazing. That would be amazing.
I do, again, I don't want to come across too stalker-ish, but I do really sincerely feel something very significant with you taking place here, unfolding. And I suppose it's just I want to vocalize it because I don't get to experience it very much, if at all ever, it feels like sometimes. And so just really wanting to kind of grab that and pull it forward and be like, this means something to me in a world where there's a lot of, outpourings of love and praise and kind of this element of platforming. But like very sincerely, I'm just really grateful that actually, beautiful Tresca raised your name in a mentoring session I was having with you years ago. Mm. Thankful for her that she said your name and I wrote it down. So like, oh, it'd be interesting. I'll have a little look, and signed up to your email list. And then I was like, whoa, this is definitely, you know, what I've been looking for. And then having the pleasure of sort of receiving you and then you saying yes. And it's just, I don't know how to explain it to you, but I have made so many invitations in such a short amount of time, which I've never done before. I'm just like, and there's this, and there's this. Will you come?
Well,
anyway, yeah.
Thank you. I received that and I feel the same. And I just, it is rare to feel like I can drop in so quickly and be in such harmony in conversation and values, and just your presence and what you have created is so beautiful. And I'm just honored to be invited into it, into your space, and to be able to share and explore where it goes from here. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Before we go, how do we access you? Beyond, you know, obviously you're going to join the next season of Off. I'm sure we'll be having many more collaborations. But if somebody's listening and they want to just come into your world, how would they do that?
Mm. Well, I am primarily on Instagram. So that is one way to engage with me and my work. My Instagram is @tendedwealth. And then if you want to sign up on my mailing list, you can do that on my website, tendedwealth.com. And engaging further, it's all on my website, but I have courses. I have a course on personal finance called Thrive. That's a wonderful way for people to engage just in healing their own emotional relationship with money, but also the practical. And then I have a course for people who are self-employed, and I work with people one-on-one. So those are all ways that people can work with me. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, we'll get it all linked up for us. And yeah, just thank you again for saying yes to this and just for being like beautiful you. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Offline. As you know, enrollments to join us inside the next season of Off are now open and close on Sunday, April 28, 2024 at midnight. The URL to go and explore the program or enroll directly is getoffline.co/off. I really hope to see you inside.